Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM, www.ciut.fm over the internet. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, for today's program on Animal Voices, here with co-host Rob Moore. And we're not going to do any news today, right? Because we have such a packed show. I will give a brief introduction to the first interviewee of today's program. We have an interesting mix today. We're going to be speaking with Bill Burns, who is the director of the Safety Gear for Small Animals Company. And we're going to find out all about what that is and what it has to do with art and, I guess, relocation and rehabilitation of small wild animals. And then we are going to jump into an interview with Michael Grieger, and I'll get Rob to do an intro to that because he's the one who set this interview up.
Michael Grieger is also known as the Vegan MD. He's a founding member of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and an internationally recognized lecturer on nutrition and food safety issues. His newsletters are always a joy to read. He'll be on later talking about Atkins, his new book, Carbophobia. And we'll actually also have a call-in session where you can call in and ask him your vegan nutrition questions, so stay tuned for that.
And Bill, are you on the line? Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
You're in New Hampshire right now?
That's right.
And you're doing a residency there? What are you up to there?
I'm doing a residency at McDowell Artist Colony near Peterborough, New Hampshire. Beautiful place in the White Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of squirrels and field mice, deer.
Lots of inspiration, yes,
for tiny safety gear. Tell us about this. This is just the title, Safety Gear for Small Animals Company. I'm sure would leave a lot of people scratching their heads. Can you tell us what this is all about?
Well, Safety Gear for Small Animals was incorporated in 1993. Since then, we've been making our main product line has been safety gear prototypes for small animals. And what we take human safety gear and we reduce it down to small animal size. So we have a line of respirators, a line of hard hats, gas masks,
mm-hmm.
Gloves, and the like.
I was going to say, they're terribly cute.
Mm. Okay.
But what was the inspiration behind creating these tiny prototypes?
I guess I started thinking about what needed to be done quite a long time ago. As a child, in fact, when I lived in Saskatchewan, we lived near the edge of town in Regina, and I spent the summers in the Capel Valley. So I saw lots of rodents and prairie dogs and the like in my youth, wolverines. And also was reading to this time lots of gray owl and things like that. So I eventually went up. I coerced my parents to bring me up to see Gray Owl's Cabin in northern Saskatchewan near Waskasu.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to Gray Owl's Cabin, it's quite a journey up there. It includes the canoeing and hiking in for a day. And by the time we got there, I realized Gray Owl had died in 1938.
Uh-huh.
This was in the early 60s, so
right.
I was quite devastated. And from that point, I kind of, I pinned that as the kind of epiphanal moment of safety gear for small animals.
Wow.
Although I didn't really start making them until the mid-80s.
It's interesting, too, you know, the emphasis on small animals, because I think that through Rob and I doing this program for a while now, that it's often difficult to inspire people to care about, different animals. But I would assume, like, the small animals in particular, people don't even see. They're so easy to forget about, or people almost think of them more as insects, you know, with people with their visions of rodents and, mice in Toronto, for example.
Yeah.
I have people that I know that have, flushed mice down toilets and stuff. They just see them as completely expendable. And it's interesting, I think, that, safety gear for tiny creatures, for small animals, kind of interrupts that idea that they don't really matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I should point out we have this the company is divided into several divisions, and one of our divisions is the rescue and relocation division. Another one is the prosthetics division. And rescue and relocation provides kits with all the wherewithal to help you rescue an animal, and bring it to a safe haven.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosthetics division provides replacement eyes, claws, and cheeks. Because, as I'm sure you know, good looks and attraction are very important, and in fact, essential to reproduction.
Mm-hmm. So there's kind of two components then, that this is, you know, an art piece is trying to, you know, I would assume challenge people to think differently about our relationships with the natural world, with these animals, but also practically how do you help with rehabilitation and relocation of these animals? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. One of our current projects is we're trying to work on trying to get into Iraq and Afghanistan, because in spite of the precision bombing mission, there has been damage, and many of the habitats have been either distressed or destroyed, especially around the Baghdad. So I've written to Ambassador Salucci several letters, and also to Colin Powell and George W. Bush.
Right.
To try and bring their attention to our business and the kind of possibilities that, you know, of engendering goodwill by helping small animals in Iraq.
Bill, your exhibit of the safety gear for small animals is touring around North America right now, right?
That's right.
What have people been saying about it?
Well, I think it's been received quite positively, you know, and I think all of us at Safety Care for Small Animals are surprised and delighted to be taken up by the art world. I think our message has been getting across, and we certainly have been, our catalog is being well used in the last few months.
And it's been playing, or I guess showing in Toronto now for a little bit, and it's still showing now. People can go as well.
Yeah, it's on until February 20th, I believe.
Wow. And Rob, you were going to go. We were both going to go. We just didn't have a chance to, which is unfortunate. But
this week I'll be going for sure. At the Museum of Canadian Contemporary Art. Right?
That's right.
And the information is also on our website, animalvoices.ca.
Yeah, we have a link so people can go there and see the times and stuff like that. Good luck with the ongoing project. And it looks like you've got an incredible amount of support. You've had the exhibition in all over the world, Japan, France?
Never been to Japan, but it has been to Korea.
Okay.
Well, thanks very much for talking with me.
Well, thank you. And just to give people a little bit of a flavor of some of the things that you'll see there, there's a bulletproof vest, there's knee pads, there's UV goggles, there's lots of little things for small animals. And when you go through the exhibit, you also find out there's an educational component about why these animals are endangered and how and what you can do to help as well. And you can find out more information about that on www.animalvoices.ca. And then there's also a website that is specifically just about the Safety Gear Museum, and that's safetygearmuseum.com, and Safety Gear Museum is all one word. Thanks, Bill. We really appreciate you being on the program and encourage people to go out and see the exhibit.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Take care.
That was Bill Burns. He's the director of the Safety Gear for Small Animals company, which combines both an artistic edge and an educational component for taking care of and small animals, wildlife, and thinking about our management of the environment and why so many animals are injured and being dislocated from their homes. We're going to come back with Michael Greger, the vegan MD. We're going to find out all about his new book, Carbophobia. And if you have anybody you know, or if you yourself are on the Atkins diet, he's going to do some myth busting around that. And also, I think we're going to ask him a question about the zone. So
yes,
these will also be relevant. We're going to talk about activist burnout, and there's going to be a chance for you to call in as well and to ask your own questions. So stay tuned. We've got a packed rest of the show coming up on animalvoices.ca. Hello and welcome back to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5. I'm sitting here with a really big grin on my face because we've had one of those great live moments for radio when the person does not pick up the phone. We're going to keep trying to get Michael Greger on the line. He's the vegan MD. I guarantee you that if we don't get him this week, we will get him on in one of the upcoming weeks. We will definitely have him on the show. Next week, though, we're going to be speaking with Rita Laws, and we're going to be hearing her perspective on vegetarianism, animal rights, and First Nations issues. So she's going to come on and talk to us about that. And Lami is excited. Lami is our tech in the studio, and they're trying to get Michael on the line. So we're going to keep trying him. But the purpose of this program was we got some email from people over, I guess basically over the year, but even more than that, people asking for a show about vegan nutrition and how to transition to veganism, and we wanted to provide something for people who, you know, are thinking about vegetarianism, thinking about veganism, but don't necessarily know where to start. And we often kind of jump into the issues on Animal Voices, and we don't necessarily take a step back and look at the practical issues about if someone, you know, where do you find a good vegan cheese, or how do you find other people who are interested in animal issues? A lot of people can feel really isolated when they start looking at this stuff, so we wanted to provide something that would help people out. So we can still do that, and I'd like to still do that. I've been vegan for 8 years, and I can tell you the story of how I went vegan and how I did it. And Rob went vegan through, I guess you'd been transitioning for a while, but it really sort of solidified once you started doing the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was just looking for that, you know, kick in the ass to really kick. What was the last thing I needed to give up? You know, I think it was something as simple as mayonnaise, and yeah. I just didn't know there was the mayonnaise or the veganaise.
Yeah.
And it was just so stupid and ridiculous. And also cutting out, like, if people offered me cake or something, I had it. But, yeah, I've been transitioning for, gosh, maybe like 3 years
yeah.
to veganism. And just, you know, a really slow process that a lot of people go through. But, yeah, when I started the show, I was like, okay, well, this is ridiculous. And it was just so easy. You know, I thought, when I was vegetarian, I thought, oh my goodness, it'll be very difficult to become a vegan. And but when I did, it was the easiest thing in the world. But as with everyone, people always say, oh, well, vegans, you got to be careful. You got to really learn your nutrition and learn what to do. But of course, everyone needs to learn what to do. Everyone needs to do a lot of research into proper nutrition. And one question that was posted on our forum at animalvoices.ca was about this vegan health study, this preliminary report from Michael Klaper's vegan health study that apparently surveyed, I don't know how many thousands of vegans out there, and it found that we are lacking in some areas. That there's, of course, there's the B12 question that's, you know, ubiquitous mm-hmm. in vegan society that I think he found that some were deficient in, as well as many other deficiencies, and it's just something that we shouldn't let go of. We need to really make sure that we're healthy. I think it's difficult to promote the good vegan diet as being the ideal diet if some of us are having difficulty thriving on it.
Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of people, it's difficult sometimes when you're the only vegan or vegetarian, sometimes in a certain pocket of a community, because if you get sick once, people say, oh, it must be because...
It must be that vegan diet.
That veganism. And other people can be eating hamburgers and drinking milkshakes and getting, you know, completely ill all the time, and nobody attributes it to their diet. So it's kind of funny how that works. I always feel like a bit of a mascot for veganism.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I don't
want
to show my face when I'm overtired or, yeah, or when I'm under the weather. So
you had something to say, Lamia?
Yeah, I've been vegan for 5 years. Where we were talking about our transitions. My transition, I had been vegetarian for years and years and years and years and years. And I had knocked out lots of stuff already. And I think the last thing that went for me was eggs, when I made an egg salad sandwich. It's weird, eh? Like, even before cheese, because cheese is kind of, I don't know, I find talking to people, they're like, cheese, though, but cheese. And I'm like, yeah. But then once you know the truth and you're thinking about mastitis when you eat your cheese sandwich,
yeah.
It just kind of goes.
What's mastitis, Ronald?
Oh, mastitis is both, like, female humans and female cows get it, and it is an infection of the nipple during breastfeeding. Often happens when people over-breastfeed. Happens to humans, too. Like, it's just regular. it's a part of breastfeeding sometimes, unfortunately. It's very painful. I've known one human who experienced mastitis, and she said it was extremely painful. But as far as I know, dairy cows get it all the time because they're over-forced to breastfeed all the time, which is how we get milk. Yeah, so, I mean, thinking about let's get nasty, bloody nipples and milk and stuff when I eat my cheese sandwich made it pretty easy to go. But I remember making this egg salad sandwich, and in the process of making it, I was just like, what am I doing? I'm not going to eat it. This is disgusting. I can't stand it anymore. And then, like, made it, went through the process, put in whatever, la la la, and took one bite and threw it in the garbage. And that was that.
Huh.
Yeah.
I went vegetarian after a propaganda show, and I was 17, and it was my first punk show. And I went to Winnipeg, which was the big city, and I was surrounded by all these really cool punk kids. Yeah, and there was this band, and, you know, Chris Hanna, the lead singer, ended up playing the show naked, and I was like, this is amazing. Punk rock. Punk rock's incredible. My mom would hate this. And they also had this movie playing. They had a whole bunch of different activist groups, people featuring their various different there are various different materials on different social justice issues. Propaganda is really good for just addressing a variety of different issues. And they had this group, People Acting for Animal Liberation, PAL, which is a Winnipeg group, and they were playing this vivisection video, and there was this monkey being vivisected, and the monkey regained consciousness and was screaming. And I just remember, like, this moment where the beef burrito Taco Bell thing that I'd eaten before the show and this monkey sort of merged, and I just clicked, and that was it. That was the last meat that I had. It's funny, you know, I think that a lot of people debate, and I think it's an important debate, about whether or not we use graphic images in the animal rights movement and different movements as well, because, you know, do you sort of continue to exploit the image? Is that fair? Does that dishonor, you know, the dead or the suffering? But at the same time, how do we let animals speak for themselves in some ways?
And so much is hidden, right? Like, if you don't expose it, I mean, no slaughterhouse is going to open up their doors just to be like, hey, anybody want to see what's going on? If we don't expose it, I don't know. In that situation, I think maybe it could be overused, but I think it definitely needs to be used, because otherwise people just don't believe you.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, though, I think, being in society now, because we're so... You know, there's this, like, deluge of images all the time, really violent images, and people, to some degree, get off on them, you know, watching the news, and it's like, it's like suffering, and it's like a new kind of, it's just this incredible violent images that surround us constantly, and how do you kind of step in the middle of that and show something different, and especially when images can be doctored, and how do you lay claim to truth around an image? And I think those images are really important. But I know from my experience of doing, like, street activism and being out there and showing videos of, like, slaughterhouses and stuff, that a lot of people will walk by, and some people will stop and be moved by it. And then some people walk by, and they'll laugh, and they'll kind of get off on it. And it's always a weird moment.
Mm-hmm. I think I was having a conversation over the weekend. This is kind of one of our other shows, on a date that I was on with someone who was not vegan, and we were just talking about stuff, whatever, la la, and I was talking about how defensive people get about food, just in the same way that I am as committed to veganism and am pretty solid on my food stuff and la 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 la, people who eat meat and la 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 are also just as defensive and so on and so forth. And I think an aspect of why people laugh and why people have these odd reactions to things is that somewhere in them, I firmly believe this, we know the truth. I mean, people are uncomfortable with eating meat a lot of the time, and not everybody. I mean, I've known people who, you know, like, but I've had such, like, fierce conversations with people about what we eat and our food and la la la, and I think it comes from that place that it's in all of us. We feel uncomfortable about it, just like lots of us feel uncomfortable about other aspects of life, you know, like things where we may feel like we've done something to hurt somebody. And I'm talking about things like systemic racism and sexism and homophobia and stuff like that. And in the same way, we feel an uncomfortability in ourselves. And I think that comes from a place of truth. This is why I think using those images, we have to keep doing.
Mm. Well, and we ask a lot of people on the show, you know, how did you become vegetarian? And, like, you know, most people have said, oh, well, I was, you know, on the street and someone handed me a pamphlet. Mm. And I took it home and read it on the bus and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this happens.
Yeah.
And then that's their meat insight experience, as Michael Allen Fox would say. Like, Lauren, you had a meat insight experience. Or it was just, you know, an immediate change.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if anyone out there has any questions about transitioning to veganism or vegetarianism. If you have any questions for us, but none of us are certified in nutritional science, but we have done quite a lot of research on our own and have interviewed many experts in this field on the show, so we do have some insight. So if you want to ask some questions, please do so. The number is 416-946-7000.
And I think that it's a good idea to open up the conversation to something a bit broader than that, too, you know, beyond nutritional stuff and how do you transition. I mean, transitioning is about challenging a lot of ideology that's pretty hard and fast in this culture in terms of dominant culture. And I think a lot of people feel alienated and they don't know where to go for resources, too. So if you have questions about kind of where to find community or, you know, good books to read or things to keep you inspired or just questions about how to deal with difficult social situations, I feel like we probably all have quite a few of those under our belts and can offer some suggestion and advice about that.
Yeah, I think so. So call us, 946-7000.
And also, I just wanted to mention, for people who are looking to find out more about these issues, a good place to start would be going to the Brock Conference. There's a new conference coming up. It's at the end of February, and it's thinking about animals. It's thinking about animals in Canada. It's a 2-day conference, and we are going to give you more information as we get closer to the date. And I'll be giving a presentation there on a paper that is still yet to be written, but I've been working on it for a while. I feel like I've been working on this probably for about 6 years and just trying to solidify these views. And it's a paper about how we represent animals and just the difficult position that activists are in when they're representing another, and the kind of arrogance that's involved in speaking for somebody to think that we can do that. But at the same time, I feel that we do have a responsibility. And it's interesting, I think with activists, we are always speaking on behalf of others, especially when they're not speaking a language that we understand in the case of animals. And I think it's a difficult position to be in, but I think that the meat industry is also speaking for animals. I think a lot of people are speaking for animals. And so how do you kind of put out different ways? And how do you do it in a respectful way? I wish I could have like a translator that I could understand, you know, what the pig in the cage would want me to say. And so I'm curious about thinking about those ideas and kind of looking at our activism as well. So that's going to be at Brock University. It's not that far away. It's about an hour and a half away by bus for people who are interested in going out there and don't have access to a car.
In St. Catharines, right?
Yeah. St. Catharines.
And when is it?
I think it's February the 27th.
27.
Yeah, we'll get more information about that as that comes up. And then, as I mentioned, next week we're going to be speaking with Dr. Rita Laws, and she is going to tell us about her perspective on First Nations issues and vegetarianism. She's an amazing scholar, doing really interesting things, and we're going to find out about the intersection between First Nations and animal rights a bit more from a First Nations perspective, where she's coming from, which is something that we constantly bring up on the show as well, about some of the tensions that arise between animal rights and other social justice issues and like how to navigate that sticky territory. So that will be coming up on next week's program. I feel like that show was a long time coming.
Yeah.
I think so.
And
yeah, I'm really excited about it.
It's going to happen again and again.
Yep.
We got to go to a quick little let everybody know who we are.
Okay.
So we'll be back.
All right. CIUT 89.5.